Okay, thanks, Dave, and appreciate y'all having me here today. So this is going to be a piece of cake to implement for regulators and companies, right? You know, actuaries really do like numbers and stuff, and this just gives us a whole sea change of numbers to really get into. So this ought to be interesting, but there's time to work with this, and I'll talk about that. I'll first start talking about implementation issues for companies and then move quickly to implementation issues for regulators. Again, there's time, and I think if we go via the steps by what the PBR implementation plan provides, which was adopted recently by the PBR Implementation EX Task Force, the one chaired by co-chaired by Commissioner McPeak and Superintendent Torty. I think it's a good plan, and I think things will work. But then again, I grew up on a farm, but I do believe this will all work just fine, okay? Okay, PBR implementation issues for companies. Obviously, with a sea change like this, you know, changing the way reserves have been calculated for about the last 100, 150 years, this is going to require time. Okay, and you have a variety of companies out there. You've got the real large companies with the very complex products. Obviously, they have systems and resources that can probably adapt to this much more quickly. Then companies, a lot of variety of companies, smaller companies with likely much simpler products with less risk serving a good portion of the marketplace, and there needs to be considerations for that as well. Actually, I think Dave was saying this was about 10 years ago that he's been involved in. It might have been longer than that, but there was an effort to come up with the first draft valuation manual from 2006 to 2007. That was an academy effort, the valuation law and manual team, assembling components that Dave Navy and others had worked on, and including other thoughts on how can this work with respect to uniformity, efficiency, and there was just a whole lot of thought then, and then that first draft of the valuation manual was turned over to the NAIC in September of 2007. But with respect to smaller companies, even at that time, there was a subgroup of several subgroups of that team, which was chaired by actuary from Texas, Pam Hutchins, and other actuaries were on it that had large and small company experience. But in particular, there was actuaries, including Pam, who had small company experience and tried to develop considerations for small companies, products with less risk even at that time. Okay, some of the provisions to help with PBR implementation for companies. Of course, when the valuation manual becomes operative, and towards the end of my slides, I'll provide a more detailed slide on how that would become operative. Once it becomes operative, which is still probably 2-3 years out, there's a 3-year phase-in or a 3-year transition period. So companies will have 3 years from that operative date, and of course it's for new issues only, as Larry had mentioned. They'll have 3 years in order to either bring on PBR right away, and some companies may want to do that for a lot of these more complex products. You know, in a sense, I'm kind of jumping ahead to the examination part. This, in a sense, this is sort of like examination more of reality. There's more consumer type, realistic assumptions, company experience assumptions, instead of just some formula type number that's just out there, and how well does that equate to reality? So there's going to be a lot in the way of experience reporting and things like that, and some of these companies may want to jump on PBR right away with these more complex products. It's almost like a look-through thing where you don't need actuarial guideline 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way through 100 because of a new product design that comes along. It's sort of a look-through to just come up with modeling reality and the PBR reserve. So those companies may jump on it right away, but there's other companies who may need time. Even if they have quite a bit of resources, they may want to take some time to modify systems, make sure that they've got things in place, 3-year period of time to do that. Then jumping to another end of the extreme, typically a lot of companies who do business only in one state would typically be the smaller companies, and there is the ability for the insurance commissioner, as provided by the standard valuation law, which is being considered for adoption, at least those changes, for a single state exemption. So that's something that can help with company implementation, and the commissioner can grant those companies doing business only in that state an exemption from the PBR requirements. PBR automatically exempts some simpler products from PBR, and excuse me, the valuation manual automatically exempts some simpler products from PBR. Included in that are credit insurance products and pre-need products. And there is, let me mention another period of time to get ready for PBR. It's this period of time right now. There's going to be time between now and the operative date of the valuation manual, which anybody's judgment, whether it may start in 1-1-2016 or 1-1-2017, I've got some odds on that, but I'm not quite sure. But there's still this period of time. While we're working on it, in addition to the transition period that starts when the valuation manual becomes operative, we're working on it. LADIF and others are working on the valuation manual to make improvements to it. And make a long story short, the reason why I say that is because in this meeting we talked about industrial insurance. How did we miss that? So that's another product to add on to the types of products to be automatically exempt from PBR when the valuation manual becomes operative. There's a host of other adjustments that LADIF is working on, and others, the experience reporting requirements are moving along, which I'm sure many of you are aware that is, you know, within VM 50 and 51, Kansas and New York are doing a pilot project. The experience reporting requirements in VM 50 and 51 are focused on life insurance experience reporting requirements. And the interesting thing about reporting experience in general is that in the past it's always been voluntary submissions to the Society of Actuaries, and it just depends. If there's a great deal of participation, you can have very robust experience, but with the valuation manual, it is mandatory submissions. So that experience is anticipated to be as robust as the regulatory required pilot project of New York and Kansas, which should represent roughly 80% of the industry, designed to be a pilot for how this VM 50 and 51 may work. Other products may come along during this time and even after the time the valuation manual becomes operative to be placed within VM 50 and 51 for mandatory experience reporting. I'll just note one particular charge of a group at this meeting. It's drafted right now in their 2014 charges. That's the Health Actuarial Task Force, and they put in as charge number 11 efforts to develop experience reporting requirements for long-term care, and I think that could be very useful at the time the valuation manual becomes operative for that to be in place as well. Okay, there's also exclusion tests, and I mentioned that subgroup by Pam Hutchins a good while back. In particular, that subgroup started efforts on developing exclusion tests that are fairly close to what you'll see here today on the next slide. And those exclusion tests from the more complex PBR calculations, you probably got a feel, they can be pretty complex from what Larry and Dave were talking about. If a product is just not in the need of that level of rigor, there's some exclusion tests designed to exempt those products from those heavier calculations. Okay, one is the stochastic reserve exclusion test. That's the one with that CTE metric that takes roughly 1,000 to 10,000 scenarios. The easiest way, and these would be for products not automatically excluded from PBR, but the easiest way to be excluded is if there's a certification provided by a qualified actuary that there's no material interest rate or asset return volatility risk. Now, of course, it cannot be used for certain products, and those certain products include variable life insurance as well as universal life products with secondary guarantees. But that's the easiest way. If there's a very simple product, that's an accommodation for exempting those from PBR for the stochastic reserve calculation. There's always a way out with the demonstration. If a demonstration can be provided that the stochastic reserve requirements will not produce any higher reserve, be a lot of judgment, case by case, look at those, but that's another way out from being subjected to the stochastic reserve calculation. And then there's a stochastic exclusion ratio test. I'll have to say that, and that's a B minus A divided by C. If it's less than 4.5%, then you're excluded. I won't go into the B, C, and A. I don't want to say it's as easy as ABC, but 'cause that's why it's in a little bit different order there. That test is actually a little bit rigorous, involving some calculations of an adjusted deterministic reserve, but it's there, and that's something developed by that subgroup that I mentioned of small and large company experienced actuaries. Okay, and then the not as hard of a PBR calculation, but still fairly rigorous, is the deterministic reserve, which Dave and Larry talked about. It's not as hard of a calculation, so no need to have as hard of an exclusion test. Products can be excluded from the deterministic reserve requirements if the sum of the net valuation premiums, and that's under either the current type requirements, or if the new net premium reserve has been developed for that product, it would be those net valuation premiums. If those net valuation premiums are less than the sum of the corresponding gross premiums, then that product can be excluded from the deterministic reserve calculation. However, you can't use it for universal life products with secondary guarantees or for products required to calculate the stochastic reserve. Okay, now on to regulators. That comment, I was somewhat kidding about it being a piece of cake to implement, but there's some good direction in the PBR implementation plan. A lot of good thought went through it this summer prior to the PBR implementation EX task force adopting it. The regulatory review of PBR, obviously that's something that we're all going to be faced with, those of you regulators in the audience. How are we going to review PBR? How are we going to make that a consistent review? Those states who are called market states, they may or may not have a lot of companies domiciled in their states, but there's a lot of business in those states, those market states, from companies domiciled in other states. So those states in particular will be keenly interested in a good, in-depth, consistent regulatory review of PBR. Development of tools and information to support the review. Larry mentioned one type of example of a tool, and that is, and a lot of that could be derived from some of this VM 50 and 51 experience reporting, including the Head Start pilot project with New York and Kansas, to try to develop some benchmarks, some ranges, so that when you're examining a company, if they fall outside of those benchmarks, then that's something to give a more focused review, whether it's a benchmark of mortality or lapses or perhaps a consumer behavior or other type of consumer behavior type of assumptions. There could be other tools as well that could be derived from some of the VM31 PBR reporting. I saw all these numbers. I think I finally have them memorized, what VM20, 30, 31 are. But VM31 is the annual PBR report that's to be submitted each year. That'll be a key tool for not only examinations, but also what could go into the financial analysis handbook steps. And within that type of information, there could be some information derived and automated that would give some quick benchmarks there or tools for regulatory review. As I mentioned, the consistency in PBR review across states, that's a key focus as well for implementation for regulators. And I'll mention on the next slide something that could help with that. Obviously, how are we going to report PBR in blanks? But the good news is that there's been a head start. There's actually a draft document for what information should be reported in blanks. And actually, in looking at VM 31, that's an annual PBR reporting to be provided by companies. Although that's a confidential report, not all the information in there is confidential, and that'll be another rich source of information to pull some of that out of there and put into the PBR reporting for blanks. Not everything, though, is without issues. There's a number of issues that we'll have to address in that PBR reporting for blanks, a few of which are mentioned in this one PDF document that I talked about that is a draft head start for PBR reporting in blanks. But a lot of good resources from the other regulators and others. And I guess you know that Larry Bruning is when we refer in the PBR implementation plan, as a resource or an NAIC resource. Larry is one of those resources, and the NAIC will be looking to get additional resources, and that will help in the development of these PBR review procedures and also in the final implementation of the review. State regulatory resources, that NAIC resource will be a big help to the state regulatory resources. And training is something that the PBR Implementation EX Task Force will directly address. There's training actually scheduled for, and this would be relevant, it's not the heavy-duty actuarial training, it's for state regulators, especially at this time of year when you, it may be relevant if your state hasn't adopted the PBR enabling legislation. That webinar may be of some use as well, in addition to the PBR implementation legislative brief that the Implementation Task Force developed. It's out there on the PBR Implementation EX Task Force website. It's a PBR briefing document that is useful for if you're bringing this to your state legislators. It's at a high level, and then there's another document that's in a more detailed level that's very useful. And the I believe it's October 9th is the date for this initial webinar, but feel free if somebody knows better to correct me on that. I'm going from memory right now. So something you can monitor on the NAIC website.